The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 29th of December, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green on this Culture Thursday. The week is short, got to fill things in. I've got Mr. Mark Palmer joining me today so we could talk about the top global stories for 2022. And but just before we get there, good morning, Mr. Palmer.
Good morning, Erin. Good morning.
How are you doing?
I'm beautiful.
You sure?
Can't believe it's the end of the year. We're getting there.
Almost there. Something. Absolutely. Wow, right? Sam Bankman-Fried didn't lend you any money, eh? You good?
Yeah. No, I don't have to pay nothing back.
You don't need a slow little $10,000 loan or nothing like that, eh?
No, but if he had lent me money, it would have been spent by now, I'm sure.
I agree. I think everybody agrees with that.
Boy, but that boy is having Christmas with his parents. One nice little holiday.
That's good.
Security.
They should be tied to his mother's left leg.
He got his laptop.
No. This is it. That's why you should have kept him in a Bahamian prison. Mm-hmm. They ain't got no internet in there.
That's true.
I mean, that's not true, but still. Very inconsistent.
He would have to floss his teeth with a plastic bag, or learn to, right?
Yeah, it may be a better practice. I'm very concerned, though. I'm very concerned because, I mean, we can get into it, but to touch on it right now, it's like, in today's paper even, in today's Guardian, there's an article on the front of the fold. It continues to page 6. It's FTX debtors want donations returned, right?
Yeah.
And is it John Ray the Third? Mm-hmm. The debtors, they speak. It's such sternness, you know. Mm. There's this energy behind it that they have to get the money back, and they're demanding it. And don't go donate it to no charity for no tax break or anything like that. Don't try get the money out of your hands. We coming for it, right? But then I juxtapose that to the idea that from the moment that SBF was in custody, the Bahamian U.S. custody, that it doesn't appear as if they're taking this seriously. You have this guy in custody because you allege that he's committed a number of crimes using the internet to do it. Mm-hmm. But nobody seems to have felt that there's an urgent need to restrict his access to the internet.
That's unbelievable.
What I'm saying is, come lock me up. Come try lock me up for fraud, for receiving stolen goods. And you have not, in fact.
Look at Julian Assange, right?
Yeah.
He released some, you know, evidence of U.S. war crimes. The dude, he's 23 hours locked down for the last 3 years in the most maximum security prison. No laptop. No internet, no nothing. He can't even put his case together with his lawyers.
Yeah.
And yet on the other hand, this dude is like a little SPF. Slap on the wrist. But apparently this was something that was negotiated prior to his extradition. This is what the
Hold on, they negotiate. So they sat down and had a, it's not a
his
lapse.
Lawyer. Well, I know in one Twitter space, he was asked by a guy called Kim.com whether there was negotiations going on between his legal team and the DOJ, SEC, and he refused to answer the question. So that is alleged, the allegation is these things were all done in advance, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he must have something on somebody.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's one perspective.
Yeah, of course.
Another perspective is that he's always been right where he was supposed to be all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I were to give him a nickname, I wouldn't call him a follower, but maybe I would call him a leader.
Mm.
I'm just saying. Anyway, before I get too cryptic, I got a local question before we get into some more global stories.
Mm-hmm.
To the general public, to anybody who was on Bay Street or anybody who watched the Boxing Day 2022 Junkanoo feed, right, online, on ZNS, on cable, on YouTube, any, did you hear any one or any number of people referencing Bay Street, but calling it the Boulevard?
The Boulevard?
Yeah. One or two people have said to me that they are almost certain they heard people referring to Bay Street as, and by people, I don't think people in the audience or in the crowd, but commentators. Junkanooers call it the Boulevard? But Mark, this is, see, from the moment that I heard that, right, I say to myself, I'm very concerned about any attempt to rename anything. Like, look at African, Liberated African Way.
Mm-hmm.
You blink your eye, you go home to wash sand off your feet, and in 2 minutes, they won't call it Palm Beach Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Completely eradicating the deep cultural, historic meaning of the and intent of the space, right? And so, but hearing from a Junkanooer, the Junkanooers call it the Boulevard, I got a little more inquiry. Let me tell you why.
Interesting.
See, Junkanoo was on Bay Street because the Africans went over to Bay to claim Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to some extent, it's very important that Junkanoo remain on Bay. Iterations, evolutions could go other places.
Because there's talk about putting it up to the stadium, right?
Yeah.
Which would remove that whole traditional historical significance, right?
Yeah. It would also, I think, they would have to be very intentional about recreating the sound that's created in the Bay Street corridor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm very concerned about gentrification and this drive to gentrify everything. I don't know if Bahamians have noticed. It's possibly one of the top stories. A few weeks ago, I did a story. Well, we had a discussion on the number of large-scale residential developments on the perimeter, from South Ocean or Adelaide Pines, come around to Fox Hill Road. We already see what appears to be an overburdening of overburdened land on the eastern end. And now with the development on the wharf, it would be so easy. It would be so easy for government to just rename a road like Bay Street.
So who's responsible for naming roads? Because wouldn't you want to leave that with like the historical commission? That's like, what are they called? They're downtown, right? They deal with historical issues. Maybe put it into a body like that and come up with names through, you know, engaging with civil society.
Whoever it is, it can't be the people who named that road Frank Watson Boulevard. don't let them make the decision. Okay, so quickly, just a quick text here. It is on topic, Texter. Texas said, I dropped in an expletive pothole that was covered by water last night.
Yeah.
And so far, I will be out of pocket $470, not including the money required to do the body work. Mm-hmm. So here's what you got to do, Texter. You've got to document the pothole, right? You're going to ask your mechanic to give you a proper write-up, right, of a documentation of the damage. You are going to go to the site where the accident occurred. You're going to take pictures. Preferably, you want to take them in the daytime and then you want to go back to the site at the same time that the accident occurred, so you can properly represent the conditions at the time. And then you're going to get a lawyer. Now, if you can't afford a lawyer yet, because like you have to get a lawyer to determine whether you should go forward with the case, you're going to go to the Eugene DePuig Law School Legal Aid Clinic, and you're going to start there. Yeah, or attempt to set a precedent, or see if there are provisions already existing in law that create an obligation or a statutory duty for the government.
So if somebody, say for example, somebody came onto your private property and their car went into a hole and got damaged, what would be the case? They would come for
Well, if they were, if you invited them on the property and didn't make them aware that there was a hole, and you have an issue.
You would have an obligation to fix that for your...
Yeah, for your guest, because you invited them on the property. One second. Let's go to this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Well, good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Pothole court. Now, that's a new one. I like that. You know, that falls right in line with my type of cynicism. You know, in 2008, I went on national radio, and I said I was the minister of potholes, keeping them deep and wide. You know the song in church? And it was a joke. I believe it was Jeffrey Lloyd who actually said he wanted to promote me to the Minister of Utilities once I started talking solar. But let's stick with the potholes. You pay how much money on every gallon of gas? Road tax. Do you know that?
Yes, sir.
Is it $1.10?
I can't remember. I don't have a... I'm not a real...
Yes, you pay
participating member of society, Graham.
Our gas should be cheap, but we pay a road tax that was implemented by... the man in 1970s. I wouldn't call his name.
Is that the one who wants to own the sun? Or the one they named the road after?
Yeah, the one they named the road after.
I got you.
Fox Hill. Yeah. And he was an honorable man. And he implemented that and said the roads would be streets of gold.
Hold on. They named Bernard Road after Bernard Nottage?
No, I ain't talking about that man. I'm talking about a road in the back of the prison.
Which one?
Remember? Oh, Lord.
Anyway. Graham, I ain't never been... I used to only throw sweet cream over the wall.
I'll text you. It's a big acreage home in the back there. I wouldn't call the name. I'll text you the name. And where did that gas money tax go for the road?
I
pay a driver's license.
It goes into consolidated fund.
And you pay a car license.
Consolidated fund.
You pay a driver's license. All this is supposed to help keep these roads fresh, you know.
I mean, technically, but not technically because they go into consolidated fund.
Well, let's review before independence. We had different ministries, and we had, I'm told, allegedly, but you check it out.
We also had the UBP before independence. I mean, immediately before.
Well, let's use the UBP. When they were in, we had different bank accounts for each ministry and accountability. So when the money went for the road tax, it went in a separate cookie jar. And you had to be accountable.
Graham, listen, you're making some decent points, but don't make me crack jokes. I got to go. You're going to make me say they definitely did have different bank accounts. Bank accounts for them and bank accounts for us. But I appreciate the point that you're making, Graham.
Let me wrap up with this one. Buy a truck because you could need it.
I got you. I feel like I need to buy a lawyer. That's what I need to do. I need to buy a lawyer.
So all they back in the day, they would have to get Sam Bankman-Fried to come down and put a back door between those ministries, and then they could whip that money across without anyone knowing, right?
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Graham. Thank you very much. The state of the roads are definitely deplorable, but that's not the story of the year. The story of the year is the lack of oversight for the roads, right? That's really the story. But
I mean, I do see potholes being repaired. You know, there's sections where it's like, wow, they did it. But there are, you know, my car, I bought it 3 years ago and already everything is creaking.
Yeah. It's not a matter of are they repairing potholes? Is can they repair them quickly enough? And are they doing a good job of repairing them? Is there an inspection team? Because there must be an inspection team.
Wouldn't it be easy just to have an app, which is, you know, connect to your GPS, and you could just take a picture?
You mean the type of app that need electricity and internet connection, Mark?
Well, you know, easy. Take one picture of it, and it sends it to the Ministry of Works with the GPS. Boom. They have it, and once they fix it, they can then move it out.
They have an app called WhatsApp where you could take a picture of the pothole and send it to them with the location.
With location, you could. We already have that, so we could do it. Low tech, but it would work, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I mean, they are repairing potholes A couple of weeks ago, I read the stats, the rate at which they're repairing them. That's not the problem. The problem is they're not doing a good job of repairing them. The problem is that they refuse to adjust to climate change. Like, this has been a particularly rainy period. In fact, it's been a very, very wet year. Yeah. Somebody have to adjust. And if you don't want to adjust the quality of work, then somebody got to adjust the paycheck at the end of the day. Where are the inspectors? Why are potholes birthing new potholes? Why is the pothole you just repaired requiring repair in another 2 to 3 months? But even better than that, Mark, who is providing oversight and monitoring damage caused to the roads by unroadworthy vehicles and corporate and commercial vehicles that are either riding too heavy, their equipment is not properly secured, they're cutting trenches in the ground, and somebody is supposed to, like I say, I find it difficult or even unnecessary to focus on the worker, because good management can help any worker improve or identify workers who can improve and kick them out of the system. Somebody said, yes, I was in the square. One of the MCs did say the boulevard. Okay. Okay. So this is a broader, it's a conversation about gentrification. It's broader than I thought it was. And now I got to inquire why a junker knew was calling it the boulevard. And maybe that's why, because of the space. Even, but look here, it's good to have a junkanoo, you know, to inform you. Because even with the undeniable commitment to junkanoo, the art form and the cultural expression, undeniable commitment, junkanoo, I think, has moved away from its roots. And it's nothing nefarious. It's just maybe we are unable to pay attention to every element of the culture at the same time because we're so small. Right? Even a place with Trinidad with a couple million people, they have enough people to have a carnival unit at University of the West Indies and to focus on it. And so maybe it's just due to a lack of ability to grow every single element at the same time that junkanoo has moved away from its original.
Yeah, it's like a little cultural creep, right? You need to pay attention to that because it's probably not intentional, is it? It's just, as we move along, get bigger, groups get bigger, more competitive.
And the collective, right? Like, what hit critical mass first? The realization of the commercial potential of junkanoo or the realization of the necessity to preserve junkanoo, right? And I think that which occupies the most space is the sort of commercial, because we see it as perhaps the only avenue to grow it. And we don't see practicing to preserve, right? Like practicing the old style to preserve it as an effective or efficient way to grow it and keep it sustainable. But you see, like in that space, if we had a unit at UB, that's the space in which we would be interrogating all of these ideas, not necessarily forcing the junkanooers to stop their work.
Looking at options, you know, different options for expansion. Yeah, for sure.
Right. And it's something that the Research and Sustainability Unit at UB could take up right now with the oral and public history unit at University of the Bahamas.
It is such an important part of our culture.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Like conch. You know?
Yeah. Just remember, I do the conking in Conk Nation. Okay. So here is a list. Let me give you the list, my list, and then you give me your list of what I think are some of the top stories for 2022. Well, let's start very close to home, unrest in Haiti. While Jovenel Moïse, the president of Haiti, was assassinated on the 7th of July, 2021.
And we still don't know who did it, right?
Right.
Which is Kennedy situation. It's shocking, isn't
it? We don't know who's at the root of it, because I think they've determined that there was a Colombian military or mercenary unit responsible. But since then, unrest has escalated. And it's certainly, his assassination is certainly one of the causes of the escalation of migration to and through the Bahamas, right? And I thought that's a top story, yeah. Because within there, we see local employee of Bahamas embassy in Haiti was kidnapped this year. It was not a Bahamian, and she was not kidnapped at the compound. It was in a residential area. And I think after a few months of negotiation, she was safely returned to her family. Another story related to the Haitian unrest is 17 dead after boat carrying Haitian migrants capsized in the Bahamas. And that headline is actually from the UK Guardian, not the Nassau Guardian, right? It's word is spread. And then from there, I realized migration is a big global thing. And on this side of the world, we haven't really talked about the UK-Rwanda Migration and Economic Development Partnership. And I think that's extremely important. I thought it, for a while now, it was important for us to talk about that. And what has happened is that at that summit of the Americas, I think the United States of America introduced its own U.S. Caribbean migrant plan, right, where they... the language they use is temporarily holding migrants in a third country or expanding capacity and at an existing facility at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. And they use the term lily pad. They would designate these third countries that would hold them as lily pads, right? And I think, the Bahamas did not sign on to that agreement, but I think it's fair to say that the Bahamas may have been a model for that agreement. Right, and we may have been a lily pad before the terminology was turned into policy. I think that's a big story. Then global military conflict, but not just Ukraine. I think Ukraine is a big story, but I think more important than Ukraine is that the Ukraine conflict turned our gaze from the rest of the world. And it was as if there was no other, there were no other conflicts happening around the world at that time and continue to happen. And so I think...
Syria is still real.
Yemen, Tigray.
Yeah, there's still at least six or seven major conflicts going. There's also the Israeli-Palestinian situation. Gaza was bombed again. The world's largest open air prison.
And even now, Croatia... Right, there's tensions in Croatia as well.
And of course, which was more of, the whole Taiwan situation, Taiwan-China, that's very explosive.
That was a very strong move by the U.S., not just showing up once, but showing up twice. And what China says...
What was interesting was just after that, they had an election. And it was very much for the One China policy. So the whole thing backfired. Pelosi's visit backfired because it actually galvanized the population to vote the other way because they did not know how much they feel about their sovereignty. They did not want a big conflagration with their neighbor. And I think they were looking to Ukraine and seeing what could potentially happen to their country.
Yeah, and they moved in that direction.
So maybe that was on purpose or it was an unintended consequence. Very hard to tell, isn't it?
Yeah, and then... a story, Zimbabwe bans raw lithium exports to curb artisanal mining. That's the headline in case anybody wanted to look it up. Zimbabwe bans raw lithium exports to curb artisanal mining. That was in Reuters, right? And it's like the raw product. What's fascinating about this story is not just that it appears as if only a couple of Chinese mining operations will be exempted from the ban. Now, lithium can be exported in processed lithium, right? But the only people outside of Zimbabweans who will be able to mine are these two or three Chinese companies. That's not the most interesting part. The most interesting part is what happens to people who have lithium in their country. And we could see a few years ago...
Put under a lot of pressure.
Yeah. In fact, just this year, Elon Musk, this is the headline, Elon Musk confesses to lithium coup in Bolivia. Now, let me tell you all something about global foreign politics and Bohemians.
Economic hitman. You read the book, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He came here, John Perkins. He came actually here about 4 years ago. Fascinating guy. I've just been listening to it again, how it works. But it's not just the U.S. Every country is doing this.
But like
every major, you know, China will be doing this in Africa. Maybe slightly different methods, but yeah. It's, if you got assets, watch out. Somebody's going to come and help you make some decisions for your country that may not be the best interests of your people.
Right. But I mean, listen, Trump, Biden, they could come here and say, but listen, Ms. Green, we take in all these conch shell or we gonna have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. They could even send a Scaramucci to come look me in my face and say, look here, we want the thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But don't send no Steve Harvey. Don't send an entity.
There are only probably 5 sovereign nations on the planet. The rest of us are all singing to a tune, right? Whichever, if you're an African country, you're singing to a particular tune.
But this is the best plantation to be on, Mark. You don't think the Bahamas, the Commonwealth of the Bahamas is the best plantation
it's
to be on?
Because we don't have any. Well, we do. Well, actually, no, I'm not going to say anything. But yeah, but we think we are a sovereign nation, but we're not really.
I ask people all the time, can you see the plantation through the palm trees? Mm-hmm. You know, dear U.S. government. Don't mind the magnificence of conch shell, you know. Just pretend like they don't exist. And me and you, we'll be fine.
I thought all the conch shells were already hoovered up when Bahama was being built.
Producer, if you can play conch and get no bone for me, man. They surely did. Yeah. Dear Bahamians, if you're wondering why I'm talking about conch like this, go research it. There's a reason why some of us declare with pride that we are from Conch Nation. And in the Conch Nation, we do the conching. Mm-hmm. I mean, research.
We've probably
the
got the fastest conkers in the world, right?
Yeah.
People who could clean conch.
Crack conch.
Yeah, like in like 10 seconds.
You should have been here for the king and the queen of the conch conversation. I had Dr. Nyambi Hall Campbell Dean and her husband, Popeye, the celebrity conch chef. I can't call him the celebrity conch. People may not understand the way I understand. But absolutely right. Absolutely right. Okay. Then, since we're talking about Elon, Elon buys Twitter. The global north tries to shut down Twitter and divest.
But for me, that was the biggest story of the year. I know Ukraine was one. Mm-hmm. We could maybe talk a bit more about that later, but Elon Musk buying Twitter, and then the Twitter dumps. I don't know if our listeners have actually been watching, because it's been pretty much not, the mainstream media have completely ignored it.
Oh, yeah.
But they've been 8 Twitter dumps. And so when he bought it, he said he believes that he's a free speech absolutist, and he was going to look into Twitter and make sure that transparent. He was going to give independent journalists access to all the files and let them report. And 8 of them have already reported. And it's been shocking. Mm-hmm. And what was found is that Twitter, and this is not just Twitter, but all the other social media companies, were basically the propaganda arms of whatever U.S. government was in power and the intelligence services.
Social media.
We thought Twitter was a town square where you could say, for example, now, you know, we could have a debate, et cetera, but it was being completely
some of us thought
propagandized.
That, but some of us were already aware that Twitter was not the utopia.
No, I know. I got banned. And
you
then reinstated.
Banned?
Yeah.
And reinstated.
Yeah, and all I was doing was quoting CDC data, but it didn't
align with the current narrative.
With what was the current narrative at the time. And what they found just a couple of days ago, I think it's Martin Zweig, he's an independent journalist, he released the COVID files. Mm-hmm. And it just showed that Twitter and the social media companies were just the marketing arm for the pharmaceutical companies or the government public health policy. And there was no debate. Anyone who had a contrary opinion was shadow banned, which meant that their tweets wouldn't get any reach or couldn't be shared. Mm-hmm. Martin Kulldorff was one of them. This dude is a professor at Harvard, one of the top guys in the world on epidemiology. In March 2021, he tweeted, he said, saying that you have to vaccinate everyone makes as little logical or medical sense as saying you have to vaccinate nobody.
Mm-hmm.
He said the only people that should really be vaccinated are people at high risk and their caregivers. Anyone with natural immunity doesn't need it, and neither do kids. For that, he got permanently banned.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no debate. I'm not talking about a conspiracy theorist. I'm talking about some really serious people. And it looks like he's going to release the amount of scientists that was suppressed by Twitter. And mm-hmm. it's probably in the thousands. I'm talking some really serious people like Robert Malone, mm-hmm. Peter McCullough, who came here, top cardiologists in the world, top publisher on early treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And he was removed. And so that was shocking. I didn't realize how, because I had a sense that there was, censorship, but I didn't know how much.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to people I know in the past, and they said, no, there's no censorship. But of course, you wouldn't know, would you?
Right.
But now it's coming out. And the mainstream, but what started it was the Hunter Biden laptop story, which was suppressed by the Democratic National DNC, as well as the intelligence community in the States. This was the absolute fact. You know, they found Hunter Biden's laptop. It had a lot of incriminating information on it
mm-hmm.
about influence peddling and, mm-hmm. you know, lots of dodgy things, which also implicated the big guy,
mm-hmm.
POTUS.
Mm-hmm. POTUS, yeah.
Now POTUS. And it was suppressed. And in fact, the intelligence community came out and said it was Russian state propaganda. They knew it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a lie. And basically,
Twitter helped to push that lie.
And push Biden into the White House. So mm-hmm. now, they did a survey. If you'd known about the Hunter Biden laptop story before the election, something like 16%. Of people who voted Democrat would have voted Republican.
Mm-hmm.
This was I don't know how accurate these polls are, but that's wrong. You can't be doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, so thanks to Elon Musk, and this is happening on Facebook, YouTube, mm-hmm. LinkedIn.
And it's happening in the Bahamas as well, right?
He's saying the legacy media. So Martin Zweig, I think his name is Martin Zweig, he was saying, the whole idea with the legacy media would be the fourth estate would be a counter against excessive government power, which, like, if you went back to the 60s, that's what the New York Times, the Washington Post did. They questioned the Vietnam War. Nowadays, the legacy media just is part of
and shuts down anything that's not a part of the official or formal narrative. Yeah.
And my worry was, the whole Ukraine thing. We've been given one narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening, a lot of people are now moving away from the legacy media and going to independent journalism like The Gray Zone, Max Blumenthal. There's a lot of people who are out there who are giving it more unvarnished and
mm-hmm.
a more, a centrist approach mm-hmm. to it. So you can see the both arguments and then decide to yourself. And, when we're taught that, it's Putin is bad, of course what he did, nobody can apologize for what he did. But when you question the official narrative, that doesn't make you a Putin apologist. That just makes you question the official narrative. And, there's a lot of evidence out there that there was a red line that NATO crossed
mm-hmm.
and the U.S. crossed, and which went against Russian interests. And there we are today. I mean, I'm going to leave it at that, but we do have cables. WikiLeaks, he dropped Robert Burns, who's now the head of the CIA.
Yeah.
Was ambassador to Russia back in 2008. And one of the wiki cable leaks that came out, he actually warned in 2008, if NATO expanded,
mm-hmm.
if they continue to interfere in Ukraine policy, that was going to be a red line from which we would not be able to recover. That was 2008, and that is in the public record. Our listeners can go and look at that.
Yeah.
But we're led to believe that it was all Putin. And that he's some
just doing the prep for today's show, right? I call what we commonly know as the war in Ukraine, I've been calling it the U.S. invasion of Europe, right? And so when I go to do my research, I find the Russo-Ukrainian war. And I say, okay, well, that's the war in Ukraine, right? That's what we're talking about. But listen, it's from Wikipedia. It's from Wikipedia now.
It's a very, I mean, it's a complex issue. Yeah. I'm not an expert, but I've seen stuff that would counter the official narrative, which is in the public domain, but we don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to have these conversations because so much context is required to understand what we're interrogating, the approach you're taking. But listen to this. The Russo-Ukrainian War has been ongoing between Russia, alongside Russian separatists in Ukraine, and Ukraine since February 2014. Yeah. Now, the first time that I was doing research on this, this entry I do not think was there. I'm not certain, but this is not what I read the first time, and it just seems to me how intentional it is to sort of paint this picture like that, that any NATO or U.S. engagement is actually a response to Russia, right, and not a threat against Russia. And so
some of them are a response. You know, the Minsk Agreement that took place in 2014, Angela Merkel, who, you know, he's Chancellor of Germany, retired, she actually said that wasn't really a peace agreement. That was just 7 years to give the Ukraine time to build up their weapons to be able to withstand the attack that was coming, that they anticipated was coming at some point.
But they knew it was coming because Ukraine actually, I think prior to this...
So they had no intention of they went into this peace accord, the parties, they had no intention. And so, you know, that's shocking that it's all done. So we get this one narrative that, and then when you hear leaders, once they retire, they say they're a different story, right?
Then we get to some text, and then we get back to the story. I get a text that says, I'm a long-winded speaker, so I didn't really like to message with Twitter because they didn't give me room or space to explain my reasoning properly. It's not just that texter, right? Like Twitter is like a totally different space from Facebook. Yeah. It's a totally different space from engaging people like in the office. What I wanted to say to you just now, give you room to explain your reasoning. The question is, are they really listening? Is Twitter more of a sounding board for some people? But I think why Twitter, the Twitter space is the most important story of the year is because Twitter has become a savior, like a connector for people in the global south. Twitter has been like an equalizer for people in the global south, academics, advocates, professionals, and to just remove Twitter, to disappear, would collapse many systems in a lot of development that's taking place.
But one thing the texter could do, what a lot of people are doing to develop their arguments, they publish on Substack, and they'll put a link to that. So they'll do like a four-line, you know, a summary, and then you can click on the Substack article and get the reason. So that's how a lot of people are doing it, or sending links to data.
Here's what I do. I think about the text, and then I break it down into reasonable chunks and label, and then you just label it.
You go one, and then two.
Yeah, and so
three.
Don't worry about how long it is. Just break it up and get it out there. But the more you practice communicating in the space, the easier it'll get. I see producers that call. Is that line working? Good morning, caller.
Hello.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Creed. How's everything?
Everything is good.
Hmm?
Everything is good.
Yeah, good. Hope you enjoyed yourself at the Junkanoo Parade. I had a ball a few moments. I was down there.
They let you on base, Sparky?
If they let me on base.
I'd search you and send you home.
I had costume.
Oh.
What? Anyway, if you come to Bay with your costume, ain't nobody could turn you away.
I could say something that when they could get mad at me. I saw some people on Bay Street rushing with just jeans and T-shirts.
Blasphemy.
I was told that to enter the parade, if you didn't have tickets to sit in the beaches, you had to have on a costume. That's the rules of Junkanoo.
Listen, I thought you
I'm going to get to the Ukraine in a minute, but I just wanted to clear up this thing. I was told in my 64 years ago in the Junkanoo that to enter the parade and participate, you must have a costume in some way, either decorated or fringe. Rules, right?
Yeah.
Now, other than that, the police be crowded up in the front of the people. So people who pay to watch Jungle who can hardly see. And then you have the press. They got their badges on to notify that they are the press.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the marshals and the judges.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that don't do news, need uniform costume because they have badges to say who they are. Anybody else participating, ringing cowbell and everything, supposed to have on costume, right?
Right. So you're saying people were rushing without a costume on?
They was rushing without a costume.
Yeah, they was rushing for the valley?
They was rushing without the costume. In fact,
Junkanooers will not snitch on each other. I love it.
That's for a group? Or
now, you can go back and look at the Junkanoo, and you'll see people rushing in jeans and T-shirt with not a piece of fringe paper or no glitter or no feather.
I got you.
Okay, just look at it. And if I say something, they get mad at me. But anyway, back to the Ukraine and the wars and so forth that we see already proliferated throughout this world. And for a reason, people don't seem to admit. They keep wars going on because it's big business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
Amen.
They don't care if women and children and sick people in the hospital mm-hmm. get killed or bombed or nothing. And you haven't noticed when the war's going on. The war never take place where the capital palace is of the president or the king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bombs don't play it flying over where Putin living or where the president of Ukraine living. The war and the bombs that they drop it on hospitals
mm-hmm.
where sick people are in the hospitals.
Schools,
where children, little innocent children go into schools.
Mm-hmm.
Where people are living, mothers and people who are not in the war are living. Those are the people that are constantly being killed all over the world. And these wars are being funded by the bigger nations in the world who call themselves Christians and different religions. America is one of the biggest funders of war. They just passed something the other day where Biden said they sent $1.7 billion to Ukraine to assist them in more ammunition and everything. The ammunition, the jets, the guns, the bombs, the bullets, everything is made in American factories, providing jobs for Americans. It keeps the war going on because there's big business. They don't care. Nobody who gets killed, who ain't do nothing, who ain't pick up a gun to fight nobody, they can't even tell you what they fighting for. And then you see, if this war ever is completed, another war will be starting somewhere else. Because every jet they make in a factory, you can't put it in a warehouse. They want that jet to be up in the air. When that jet is up in the air, they want it to be loaded with bombs. So when they drop a bomb, they got to put another bomb in there because they're making the bombs to sell.
Thank you, Sparky.
It's a business.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. It is.
Agreed.
Listen, thank you, Sparky. And I appreciate that. Like, we not going to study war no more.
But you know what? The amazing thing, Aaron, is that you know the Pentagon, right, has failed its last five audits. The last audit, they could not tell you where $2,000 million dollars worth of their assets.
Remember the one when Rumsfeld had to announce that there was trillions missing?
Okay,
and then the Pentagon got hit with a plane like a couple of days later?
Imagine your little farm, right? Didn't get the audit, but they still give you money.
Don't talk my business. Don't talk my business.
But they failed the audit, right?
Yeah.
They can't account for, I'm talking trillions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And yet they still give them more money. Both the Democrats and Republicans.
I'm trying to become a politician too, Mark. Why are you breaking the hustle? Listen, let's get to some texts. Now, Mark, this text is a bit rude. It says, Aaron, tell your Republican.
I'm not a Republican.
It gets worse.
Yeah.
Fool, as your co-host, that Trump ain't coming back and his FNM out of power. Stop trying to criminalize Biden. He gave stellar service 50 years. First of all, Stella is spelled STLLA. Why are you defaming this man's character. Stella is not his wife's name.
It's a logical fallacy, ad hominem, right?
Yeah. Ain't his wife's name. And I don't know if they've been married 50 years. Yeah. But that's the only... Anyway, first of all...
But this is the tribal nature of it. You know, you're either FNM, PLP, right?
Or Republican or Democrat.
Republican and Democrat.
And that's the political culture. And that's what we're trying to break through.
And you know, to be honest... you know, in the Bahamas, we probably have, what, about 30% diehard FNM, probably about 30%, maybe 35% diehard POP. Well, all those people have no principles, right? Because what is good for their party ain't good for the other party. So if the other guy does foolishness, they're going to call it out.
Now, mind you, the FNM are going to tell you, listen, 40,000 of us stayed home because we weren't prepared. I mean, I just pulled that number off the top of my head.
I'm more into critical significant thinking than tribalism, because the tribalism is killing us.
Yeah, it is.
It's killing us. It's exactly what this guy, you know, I'm no Republican, I'm no Democrat, I'm no FNM, I'm no
PLP. Even an American, he can't register the party.
You know what I'm saying. Yeah, it's all tribalism, and it doesn't help.
Let's get back to the text. Aaron, effective immediately, we can start a love offering to assist singing Bishop with paying back the $50,000 because we don't want him stressed out. Listen.
So, Aaron, how are they going to do this?
They're going to do it like this. They're going to take the money from the Democratic PACs, and they're going to take the money from the Republican PACs and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party first. Mm-hmm. That's how they could do it. They could do it for, and once they've completed that task, then they could come to us and ask us about charitable donations. Like, I could see saying, look, any investments in businesses, any properties purchased, except pause on the properties purchased part, we want money back as much as we can. But charities?
I mean, if you took money in good faith for a company that appeared to be not breaking the law.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And then Bill Clinton and Tony Blair came and sat with the boy and smiled and had tea and crumpets with him.
It's not like, you know, if you have a feeling that there's something funny going on, and that was only happened in November, right? November, when that whole Binance thing hit, I mean, some people knew or had an idea earlier, but you're taking it in good faith.
Yeah.
There has to be a law that protects somebody for taking money in good faith.
Not political parties, right. But yeah, absolutely.
But lend a hand or whoever, you know, the fee, Hands for Hunger, all those people are doing fantastic work.
Definitely check out the article in today's Guardian on the front page. If I could open,
Now, what about government? Because I think he gave money to some ministries, right?
Maybe, was the procedure there? Should the government have... And for the sake of strengthening the DARE Act or future regulations, right? Like, should donations be held in escrow for one fiscal year before they can be used so audits can be, completed? Yeah. And that money is signed off on as good money. But, Mark,
if I buy a car from you for, $2,000 car for $750, I know something's wrong, right?
I mean...
Come on.
What? But say that again?
If you come, hey, or this radio with the, the old day Carter and the cables, the cut in the back. Come on, you know that's not in good faith.
Yeah, don't.
Yeah.
In fact, go ask the police to hold that for you until the criminal investigation. But listen, we got 5 minutes left. And last night I realized that perhaps we missed two stories that should be on the list. Global stories. First of all, is the Iran protests. Mm-hmm. Right now, this is interesting to me because I mean, I ain't sure how much of global North media is to be trusted and how much is not to be trusted. Right? Mm-hmm. But the Iran protests, they call it unrest. Yeah. It's really arising from the Mahsa Amini protests have been going on for 100 days plus. 100 days plus. And I think that's a very big story. But I think to cap off the year, we all almost all out of time. To cap out the year, the biggest story, the Queen is dead. Queen.
Yeah.
Long live the King.
Are we going to have a King Charles Highway or King Charles Drive?
Hopefully. Hopefully. Please come visit us, sir, so they could pave the road. Even if you come once a month, they only pay for patch at a time. Just come down so we could get some new things, please. But I think that's perhaps the biggest story causing Bahamians to reconcile.
Because we all lived our entire life with Queen, right? We never really had a... Well, I mean, there's some people who were alive when there was a king, but we all grew up with a queen.
Yeah.
But now we're going to have kings, it looks like, for the next foreseeable future.
That's up to me. Producer, we got to go to a break? All right, listen, we got a few minutes. We can go to a break. When we come back from the break, the implications of the passing of the queen for the rest of the Commonwealth. You guys stay tuned to On the Clock. We'll be right back.
Whether your business is in store, on the go, or both, let Fidelity work with you to maximize your customers' payment options with a fixed or mobile terminal so that you never miss a sale. It's safer than cash and more convenient so that you can take your business anywhere. For details, contact a business development officer today at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport or visit our website at fidelitygroup.com.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Here we go.
J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best, always. You're always covering me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
Good morning and welcome back. We had to sneak a little rake and scrape in there. The Junkanoo versus rake and scrape war is still on. Not just who's the best, you know. Can't be a war to see who's the best. They just got to challenge each other every day. So, we are all out of time, Mark, but this queen passing thing, I think...
Barbados fell.
Yeah.
Who's going to fall next?
I mean, you say fell, Barbados rose.
Yes, no. But I mean, from a British perspective, of Commonwealth perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, our Prime Minister said there'll be no discussion of republic in this parliamentary session.
I think he may have said it, but if he did say it, he probably framed it like, oh my goodness, we all out of time. I really do. I know the Bahamian people want to talk about it, but we ain't got no time left to talk. I'm sure that's how he framed it, right? Mm. But I don't see the Bahamian government pulling away from the Commonwealth to that extent. We're all about marketing.
And the king is still our head of state. Yeah. We're one of only 15 countries, right?
In fact, the king is the king of the Bahamas. He's not just the king of England, king of the Bahamas as well. I'd be waking on that, Charles. I know you don't want to be overburdened with all of these sovereign subjects.
You think he'll come?
To his plantation?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Because he came at independence. That was 49 years ago. You think he'll come on the 50th?
Cousin, don't come. Don't come, cousin. We would appreciate it if you... It was only tongue-in-cheek, because there's fixed things. When you come, don't come. We love you, but don't come. Stay right where you are. Anyway, Mark, we got to continue these conversations, because this Twitter conversation isn't going to die, and we didn't even get to that headline, how Twitter rigged the COVID debate, you know, deep into that as well. Plenty of things to talk about. Thank you for joining me.
You're very welcome.
I don't know if you have time to sit in. I'm sneaking into Cecil's show for the next hour.
Oh, okay.
We're going to continue top stories of 2022. gotcha. Close out the year.
All right.
To the audience, thank you for joining us on the Clock, and make sure stay tuned to Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry. He is up next. Have a great day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.